Hey guys, how's it going? Welcome to Drunk Movie Rants, a podcast where we talk about movies. My name is Alonzo O'Leary, also known as Lons, and I will be your host for the duration of this podcast. Every episode, we will feature a new guest speaker where we talk about different film topics and movie genres and things that we like or don't like about the world of cinema. Today's episode features a conversation between myself and two guests, one a recurring speaker and the other a newcomer on the podcast. The first is my good friend Josh Nicholson, who we heard from in episode 1 on the Auteur Theory. The second is my close friend Mathieu Daugherty. Mathieu and I attended college together at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia, where he studied animation and I studied film. Throughout the episode, we discuss the genre of science fiction, as we delve into the different sci-fi films that we love or don't love, and ask the question of what makes a film a true science fiction film. If you like what you hear in this episode, feel free to check out our website, where we list all of the different topics and films and directors that we discuss in each episode. Thanks, and enjoy.
So yeah, I figured we'd start with, first off, Josh, Mathieu, Josh.
Ahoy.
Hello.
Okay, so Mathieu, it was freshman year of college, obviously, but we talked about it the other day too, and I can't even remember now what our first movie cinematic experience was together.
Well, the one we brought up was not one that was sci-fi, but it was The Descent.
Oh my God, yeah, when we got hammered that night and we watched The Descent in my dorm room. Yeah.
Correct, yeah. Very, very late into the night, early into the morning.
Yeah, like it was like the sun was coming up when we finished it. And then
With other people too, there were a bunch of other people in the room there too.
Yeah, but they fell asleep. Were the only two that made it through it.
Yeah, we were committed.
But was that before or after we saw Twilight?
Oh, good question. I want to say before. Feel like Twilight was towards the end of my stay in Philly at the time, yeah.
Yeah, Josh, we went to the midnight screening of like Twilight, New Moon or some shit. A lot of the girls on that floor were like,
I'm going to have to get off the podcast at this time.
It's funny because I remember clearly going to see a vampire movie. What I remember preferring was a trailer for another vampire movie, the one with Ethan Hawke and what's that called again?
Daybreakers. Daybreakers. Yeah.
I was like, oh, this looks way more fun than what we're about to watch.
The trailer's better than the movie. Yeah. Did you guys hold hands?
Oh, yeah. We actually posed in the lobby to replicate the fucking poster. I'm not even kidding. It's on one of our, I think it's on Matthew's Facebook. Mine.
Yeah.
Team Jacob. Deleted.
There's a few pictures from that night. We posed the whole way on the train.
Because it was me, you, Fallon, and a bunch of other, Dare was there, or Anna Lee was there, and then a whole bunch of other, I don't even remember half the people that went that night, but it was a bunch of us.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was a good time.
That's a good memory right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, Josh, what was ours? What was the?
Let's see, Benning. We
were at Benning.
Break. Okay.
Yeah.
I had some time out, and we saw Blade Runner, and we saw that nice. It was like a dumpy theater on the outside. When you go in, it was so nice, and they had the cushioned seating.
Yeah.
Kick back. They bring you the drinks, and it was so comfortable. I almost fell asleep during like an amazing movie. You know, Blade Runner 2049 is fantastic. Well, I was so comfortable.
Yeah, it was Blade Runner 20. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Blade Runner 2049, and it was after my family left because it was after graduation and family day.
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember you told me you were getting tired during the movie.
I was just
like, it's like 2 hours and 40 minutes.
I was so comfortable. And I obviously over the last, you know, couple of weeks or months that we had been through, it was so exhausting. So I was like, you know, nobody's yelling at me, and this movie is so polite and satisfying. I'm really comfortable. I'm just going to pass out. But fantastic movie, by the way. I recommend seeing it. But it was a small screening. You know, there was like 10 people in the room. It was super personal. Loved it. Just absolutely loved that experience. That was fun.
That was a really good time
with that.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if we ever saw any more movies after that.
Yeah, we did. We saw so many movies while we were snowbirding at OCS. Mathieu, so what you have to understand is at Officers Candidate School in Fort Benning, right? So it's in the middle of nowhere, but down the street, if you walk like exactly a mile, there's a small little shopping center with a Zaxby's chicken, a Pizza Hut, and a movie theater. The movie theater's small, but they were really good at getting all the new movies whenever they came out. So Josh, we saw fucking Thor Ragnarok.
Yes,
we saw Justice. We saw Justice League, and we saw that shitty Kingsman sequel. I was so upset with that. Oh, I don't even want to talk about it.
Well, you'd hyped it up because I hadn't seen the first one. And you're like, Josh, you got to come see this. It's going to be amazing. You got to come. You're going to fucking love it, man. So I get over there. I'm like, yeah, it's all right. Was good.
But the first one, like the second one doesn't even come close to comparing. The first one, in my opinion, is so great. So great.
I watched the second one on a plane. I remember it. Yeah.
Forgettable.
Were you as disappointed? Were you as disappointed as we were, Matthew? Because I was bummed when I left that.
To be fair, for one thing, it really hasn't stuck in my mind as much as the first one did. So maybe that's a sign. Yeah. Maybe that's a sign that it was not as good for me as the first one.
OG Kingsman, man. Oh, love that movie.
Yeah. Now I'm hesitating if that's in the first one or the second one, but no, it has to be in the first one. The one where Colin Firth just kicks ass in the bar.
Yeah, that's the first one. And in the church, that extended long take. Oh,
in the church with Freebird, yeah.
Yeah, when he kills all the guys to Freebird, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Mm-hmm.
So, Josh, you haven't seen the first Kingsman yet, right?
No. After the second one, I'm like, nah, I'm good. Pass out.
Bro, you got to check the first one out at some point. I would highly... Mm-hmm. If I had known that, we would have watched that when you visited me at Fort Bliss.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. So good. Yeah. Okay. I brought the both of you here together to discuss something important.
Mm-hmm.
The premise, the genre of science fiction, the fictional science of the cinematic universe. I'm just kidding.
Good. So, please keep going. This feels like it's a much more edifying podcast.
You're fucking funny. I'm
just gonna close my eyes and you keep going.
Yeah. You could read the Bible and I would just,
oh my gosh, I don't even know right, I don't even know who I was channeling on that one. Okay, so yeah, so
I'd read a dictionary, I would love it.
Well, so Josh, I remember one of the first things that always stuck out to me when you read off like your cinematic movies that you really liked at Benning, like it was just a lot of sci-fi stuff in there. And like Matthew, what he tends to do is, I don't know if it's the time differences or his sleep schedule, I'll always get texts at the most random times, usually at night, between midnight and 3 a.m. of like, have you seen this? It's great, loved it. And I'll get like a 3 or 4 text dissertation on the movie. But like, they're so infrequent and spread apart that I lose track of what comes where. And like, it's usually sci-fi films or like very atmospheric, more subtextual movies that are very much in line with the movies that I know you dig and stuff that you and I would talk about when we were stuck in those fucking barracks at Fort Benning. You know what I mean? And it just it sent me down this rabbit hole of like, oh man, we gotta sit down and fucking have a couple of drinks and talk sci-fi. Cause I know you guys would gel well.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, I do enjoy sci-fi a lot. In fact, it's probably one of my like favorite genres. I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's one of my favorites. There's something about sci-fi that keeps me coming back. I'm a techie guy, you know, I like getting into, we were talking about earlier about programming and things like that. And, you know, always love thinking about the future, what could happen, you know, flying cars or, you know, are we going to have like cell phones? I mean, this is what, you know, like Star Trek, for example, they had little devices that they would talk to each other on. And now today people have cell phones. And at that time it seemed impossible. And so it's fun to kind of speculate and think about the future in that manner. But one thing I really love about sci-fi is how it, also speaks to what we're doing today, right? But it has a like a future context to it. So it just keeps me coming back. It's just one of my favorites. So how about you, Matt?
I enjoy, especially, I feel anything that has to do with space in general. I'm kind of a big space nerd. I like to, you know, look at any kind of videos that talks about any kind of, astrophysics, astronomy, anything like that. Anything that has to do with space, basically I'm there. Now, that is to say, there are some glaring omissions in my pop culture knowledge, mainly Star Trek and Star Wars. I hate to say, Is Star Wars technically considered sci-fi?
Oh yeah, 100%.
I'm on the fence.
I feel like there's a debate on that.
I'm on the really? Fence.
Okay, Josh, we're gonna have to talk about
I mean, that. Even Lucas said it was a space opera, you know?
That's what I mean. Yeah, it's like, isn't it sort of almost like fantasy in space?
So you would separate, okay, so this leads to an interesting discussion. So okay.
I would say, Josh. I think overall, if you had, it's hard to put everything in a category, but if you had to, you'd put Star Wars in sci-fi. When you boil it down, it's an opera, you know, it's just in space. And and Lucas came out there and said that years ago, right? Because everyone's trying to pit Star Trek and Star Wars together.
Yeah.
And he's like, they're not even, why are they enemies, right? Why are they fighting each other?
Yeah.
This is just a, you know, a family drama in space.
Yeah.
They just happen to have ships and blow up each other. And let's be real here. Like some of the sci-fi stuff I really do like about Star Wars, like the Death Star, you know, that is such a novel and very interesting concept that there could be this technology that could blow up a planet. You know, back then that must have floored people. And so I like to hear that, but you know, as far as like the omissions, because it's in space, like they take a lot of liberties. Like you hear sound in space and the way they do hyperspace is all weird and strange and not science at all. So
there's no fire in space.
Yeah, no, none of that. So you kind of have to, you know, elevate your mind a bit and just go, hey, wash it over. Okay, I got it. It's for the fun. It's theatrical, but it's not truly grounded in sci-fi, you know?
Mm-hmm. Anytime I hear a space opera, I always think of The Fifth Element.
Yes,
a literal space opera. Yeah.
Hell yeah! Oh, the Blue Diva, it's my girl. That's my girl. Oh my gosh! So you brought up an interesting point, Josh, that I think about. I was actually thinking about it today while driving to work because it brought an interesting context in my mind, right? Because I started breaking down the movies that I like would at first thought think about might be sci-fi, and then are they or aren't they, right? And like. Because so, like, for example, right, Aliens, fucking James Cameron, 86, 88, I'd have to look it up. It takes place in space and on another planet with foreign beings and futuristic stuff. But when you boil it down, it's just a crazy action movie slash, like, you know, man versus creature feature on another planet. You know what I mean? And then I think what it boiled down to me, what I think separates sci-fi and films that have just a more base, simpler story, but in a scientific setting is science fiction. So like, right, like fucking Blade Runner, the OG Blade Runner, of course, like even like Christopher Nolan's Interstellar, like 2001, A Space Odyssey, like these are films that use science and futuristic theory and predictions to posit questions and theories about greater stuff than us. You know what I mean? And there is a fine line. So Josh, I can definitely see your point there in terms of like where Star Wars would be like, it's literally just the hero's journey in space. Not to discredit Star Wars, but if we're talking about sci-fi from a very purist, like what the genre really can do at its best, that's more in line.
It's like science as a setting as opposed to science as the topic. Yeah, the movie.
Totally. And science being the foundation for what the movie is trying to say, or even the novel or the short story or whatever, because, you know, sci-fi is not just, it doesn't just fall in film, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a spectrum here. You know, Interstellar is probably one of the best examples I can think of off the top of my head that actually recruited and had physicists and chemists and, you know, astronomers on the show to help with the script and the writing. And I loved how they used the most current available information of science to add drama to the movie, which made it so much more exciting. And and for example, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity and how they adopt time into that with gravity and how they go through the black holes and how they're trying to advance civilization and they're, you know, taking risks and going out there into the unknown and the risks that they have to take, or they may never see their family again. Well, how is that possible? Well, because that's such a profound it sort of impacts me a lot more than hey, let's get in the Millennium Falcon and we're gonna shoot over to Alderaan real quick and then they take off, you know. And you know, you think about it that way, it's just it leaves an impression on you. And I think that those kind of those spectrums, and I have a science background, and I mean, I love science. And so when you can put that into a movie and it's like threaded in and it's like, it makes the whole experience so much sweeter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they actually, that movie contributed scientific papers. It wasn't just they hired, Kip Thorne was the physicist they brought in for that. And so it wasn't just a matter of hiring him for things to look right, which they did and it worked. But what they provided then was a first look at what a black hole looks like, which nobody had ever really seen before. It was always artist representations, always a flat disc with a hole like a sink almost.
Yeah.
And so it was, it's pretty sweet.
I would say it's risky too. Like if you're marketing that movie or even if you're writing the movie and you bring in some scientists, right, who might be sterile and kind of boring and old, you know, silly scientists. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, this is what the description of a black hole looks like. And they're trying to describe it. And then you're thinking like, how do I like get this interesting to everyone else who wants to come and buy the ticket to come see the movie? Mm-hmm. You know, so they're all taking a huge risk to make this interesting to everyone, right? And in an entertaining way. And it was so cool how they just made a quick little blip about it in the movie. He just takes the paper, puts the pen through. He's like, hey, that's how you travel. Holds it up and you go, see, it's a circle, you know? And so when you finally see Gargantua in the movie, it really hits you because you're like, wow, this is probably what it does look like. And it's incredible, you know? It really brings you into it. It brings you into like your own life, into your own universe and into the movie. It's a good payoff.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it already, but the whole time slip thing, which is exactly how it would work in real life, is just such an eerie kind of, I guess, device for the movie to move forward for how the risk they're taking, like you said, and also how, well, at some point, without getting too much into spoiler territory, you know, oh, well, now that's it. We've spent X amount of time. And so now this is how much time, this is how old the people are we've left home, how old they are now. So
go ahead. Keep going, Matthew, my bad.
No, that was it basically. That's definitely a real thing. And it's a weird thing to wrap your head around.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I remember the thing that stuck with me when we're talking about that, that's so well personified, is when they come back to the ship and the dude who stayed behind, because they're only gone for like 30 minutes. And he opens the door, he's got gray hair, and he's like, I waited for 7 years. And like, dude sells that, like he sells that line. Yeah. Like, it's like, you buy it. And also like, I mean, this is just speaking to good storytelling and filmmaking in general, but like, I think this is something that'll be recurring, is like, the reason Interstellar works is like, on some levels, because I do have my own issues with it, but like, because you're so invested in the characters and the things that they have to go through, that when you add those legitimate foundational science fiction facts and theories on top of it, it only adds so much more towards what the film is trying to do, you know? Cause like, for me, I still think about it and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I would have done if I was sitting on a spaceship for 7 years waiting for somebody to come back. You know what I mean? And like, it takes somebody with a certain type of brain and a certain type of mind to know, like, okay, if I do the math in my head, if this year has only been 35 minutes for them, so I just have to keep waiting, because like, that would, I'd just be like, fuck this shit, put me back on my cryo bed. Like, sorry, bro. Like, that's why, that's
right. I can't remember the actor's name who did that, but okay, so a couple of things. Hold on, I want to talk about this experience, because I did read into this. I had picked up the book on Interstellar with Kip Thorne and I was reading through that. And if I remember right from the book, they did take some liberties with sort of the math there, as far as like, if they were on that planet, how much time really had passed.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably like a year or something, but they blew it out of proportion a little bit.
Yeah.
Totally fine, right? It adds to the weight of the drama. So the part that was so fascinating to me is like his body language. You know, he gets up there and he's like, got his hands covered and he like can't make eye contact and he's speaking really soft. It's almost like he doesn't believe they're real.
Yeah,
he's like scared of them, you know.
Totally.
And it's what a trip. I couldn't even imagine. And then they turn around, right? And then not only does he have to reconnect with humanity, but then those who were on that planet and the guy that died, they lost somebody. And then he tries to get those signals back from Earth. And then I think he connects with his daughter or his son. And
it's the daughter.
You kind of hear from that. Oh, that's right. Yeah, she comes on and what was her name? Miff or
Murph? Are you kidding me? Murph.
Myth. What kind of name is Myth?
I can't believe you. Oh my gosh.
I totally miffed that one. Yeah, so when he connects with Myth, so like there's so much emotional drama in there. It's just packed in. And you're feeling it from everybody. And then there's that always that meme of Matthew McConaughey just like sobbing, you know?
Yeah.
And you're sobbing with him, you know?
Yeah.
Watching your family just disappear. It's crazy.
Well, and she's and Jessica Chastain just sells that scene because you can see how pissed. Like she's pissed, but you can tell she's only pissed because she's low-key really sad. And it just hits on another. Like I rewatched, I can't remember what I watched. Oh, I rewatched Tenet and it made me upset. So I went back and I rewatched Interstellar to try and feel better about Nolan. And he does such a great job of establishing that relationship at the beginning of the movie that like Matthew McConaughey could have like become homeless and like become a male prostitute. And I still would have been like, I love you. I care so much about you because you're so invested in his character and his relationship to her. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. I will follow you anywhere, man. I will like, oh. So then, yeah, when that moment comes, it just, it hits with such gravitas. Oh.
Right. Yeah. For someone who's kind of known to not necessarily put as much development into his characters as some other filmmakers, it's true that Interstellar, that's definitely the core of the movie.
Yeah.
Is the human aspect.
Yeah.
Of and especially the relationship between Murph and Cooper.
Yeah, Cooper.
Yeah.
Cooper.
Yeah. Yeah. Coop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it works so well. It's just so a fantastic movie. And we're talking about the spectrum, right? And I love movies that are more grounded in science.
Yeah.
I that's just me personally. As far as we talk about the whole genre of science, I particularly like that a lot.
I just think it adds more towards it. Like, I love The Fifth Element. I will never, ever.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'll never knock The Fifth Element. But there's a lot of shit in that movie where you're like, that's not how it would work. But I don't care. Like Bruce Willis totally would not survive that fireball with that ship. I don't care how many mocks he's putting into that fucking, you know, alternator carburetor fucking flux capacitor on that ship.
Right.
Like, he's dead. And also like there wouldn't have even been a fireball in space anyway. So you're already just like, what the fuck is, but either way, like, I lean more towards films that attempt towards more scientific authenticity or at least some level of legitimacy. Behind what you're seeing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was telling actually Lons recently that I did it. I said it right. I said Lons first.
Welcome to the family.
Yeah. I was telling Lons recently that I actually dove into an older Nolan flick a couple nights ago. I saw The Prestige for the first time.
Oh shit.
Not really sci-fi, although a bit of like sci-fi thrown in there just
there's to, definitely like, sci-fi in there.
Yeah. That one kind of blew me away, and also the characters are just so good.
In my opinion, that's his best film. I get into arguments with people about it all the time, but I think personally that is Nolan's strongest film.
I've seen it quite a few times now. Yeah, the ending always just like
it still holds up.
It's
like, fucking decades later. I'm like, oh, that shit is still bomb, it's still fire. Let's go, Hugh Jackman. Oh, let's go, Christian Bale.
Yeah,
like, oh, yeah. So good.
If a movie was ever a magic trick.
Yeah. Totally.
It's hard to see a movie about magic that isn't The Prestige anymore because they did it so well.
Yeah, totally.
You know? All right, so I'll throw one out since we're talking about Nolan. Is Inception a sci-fi movie?
Fuck no.
No?
I don't think it is.
I don't think so, but
no.
I see it pop up here and there. I've had conversations with people. And
does it have
sci-fi? Yeah, because it's dreams and
does it have science?
This machine that's future tech.
And does it have science fiction elements? Sure. But is it sci-fi? Yeah. Like, no. In my opinion, it is. No.
But the whole like
a surrealist film, maybe?
I think it's a I just think it's a really good genre mashup, right? Because you're taking what would essentially be a heist film. And you're merging it with a psychological thriller.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because dreams, memories, they deal with the psychology, the mind. And that's in a separate, I mean, can that mesh with science fiction? Absolutely. Has it been done well? Not very often. But I think it falls more into that, into psychological questions and the mind and grief than it does necessarily what science would have. Science is just a gateway to be able to talk about that kind of stuff in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my opinion, at least, you know, I'm sure that there are plenty of YouTubers and bloggers out there that would fucking ram me hard with their opinions on this, but that's just my personal take on it.
I would say Inception is not a sci-fi. It has like some variables in there, but overall it's a thriller heist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Interstellar, 110% sci-fi. I think we've nailed that tail on that donkey.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, pivot, or we're going to talk about fucking Nolan for the rest of the fucking night. Matt, you and I have done it, and Josh, you and I have done it on separate things. Let's talk the drinks of the evening.
Ah, yes.
Yes, so... Matthew, what are you drinking over there on Drunk Movie Rants?
I'm having a gin and tonic and a half because I had started before the podcast and then I decided, let me fill it up really quick with another one. So I have a big ass gin and tonic.
Hell yeah. What kind of gin?
Tanqueray.
Okay. Hell yeah. Josh, what are you drinking over there?
So in a hurry, I bought a disgusting gas station sushi roll. Actually, I bought it fries, but
that's not beer. That's not alcohol.
To complement the cheap sushi I bought, I also purchased some rice beer. I bought some Asahi. It's basically the Budweiser of Japan, and it's delightful. I love it. I'm kicking back tonight.
Props to Asahi. Fuck yeah.
What about you, Marcus?
Oh, me. Everything I drink is usually a variation on whiskey. Go figure. I'm such a cliche. But tonight I'm doing a Tennessee Mule. So we got a... We got some Jack Daniels with ginger beer and a splash of lime in my lovely copper mug, just to be a super elitist loser.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
For the second half of this episode, we are kicking back here, so I'm going all the way.
I already finished it. I finished it like 10 minutes ago. This is something I was thinking about again while driving to work today. So Josh, if you had to recommend, we'll do two because there's three of us, that's six different movies. If you had to recommend two of your favorite all-time sci-fi movies to somebody who's trying to get into the genre, where would you start? And it can be anything. It doesn't have to be the more popular ones. You can give me some more obscure ones, but you only get two slots.
Two movies to get into sci-fi.
Yeah. If a person's trying to get into the genre.
Yeah, we've been talking about these. Can I do three? Give me three.
Yeah, I'll give you three.
All right, give me three. I really think the big one here is The Matrix. That one's deep for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I've taken the red pill, and I just love that movie. I love it so much. And it's I've seen it 100 billion times. All right, top three. Matrix, Interstellar, because we're talking about
it. Yeah, 100%.
And then I would say Moon.
Oh yes,
and those three.
Hell yes,
there's so many others on the list we can mention, right? Blade Runner, Aliens, whatever. But I think those three really hit it for me as far as like being grounded a little bit more,
totally
layering in smart script. It's not necessarily like, you know, well, obviously The Matrix is really visual and people watch it for that, but there's so much more to the movie, psychologically and philosophically that even watching it today still impacts me.
Yeah,
so. You put me on the spot there, but
no, it's
I'll go with those three. Yeah,
go with your instincts. I'll do that. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Matthew, what do you think? I'll give you three.
I'm kind of going to go the same approach and say they're not necessarily the top three, but there are three that come to mind that I definitely very much like. Interstellar also happens to be in there. We discussed it. I'm going to go in a slightly different direction. We've discussed it before. I'm going to delve into a bit of animation. I'm going to say Ghost in the Shell.
Okay.
The animated one.
Yeah.
And let's see about a third one. I don't know why it just popped up in my head, but I always thought this is, well, now we're entering the question again, is it sci-fi? But I kind of remember, like, this is an interesting movie. It's not your typical sci-fi. Is Gattaca?
Oh, with Jude Law and Ethan Hawke. Yeah. I definitely think you could make the argument that is absolutely.
It is a future, a dystopian future that heavily involves, you know, like the idea of gene editing, things like that.
Yes.
So I don't know. It just popped up in my head and I remember, oh, that was a good movie.
I'd buy that for a dollar. I'd say yes, 100%.
Okay. That was kind of an interesting one, that just popped up in my head. But
hell yeah.
Yeah, Ghost in the Shell is definitely up there for sure.
I love OG Ghost in the Shell. Okay, I can't name the same ones you guys have named, so now I'm going to challenge myself to go outside.
I can name it, since we had already said Interstellar. I can name a third one.
Go ahead.
But I'm going to go more with a franchise. I'm probably going to say Aliens.
The Alien franchise, of course.
The Alien franchise, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the first one, I think, is the closest you'll get to being a legit science fiction film. The other ones, it's a whole muddled bag of goods.
Doesn't age well.
the first two are timeless. Nothing will ever...
For sure.
One and two, chef's kiss all around.
But the more movies they keep making, the more I'm like, oh, let's maybe not.
They could have just let it...
Just leave it.
They could have just let it go, man.
Yeah.
Three is always going to have a soft spot for me.
I know.
I ever saw as a kid.
Yeah, that's...
Aliens 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
The prison one, yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So dark. Yeah. It stuck with me. Gave me nightmares. I love it.
That was David Fincher's first Fierce Future debut.
I'm going to mess that one.
Yeah. Shit. All right, so now I'm on the hot spot here. So,
drum roll.
Okay, so obviously Blade Runner. I'm always going to say Blade Runner, 100%. And neither of you guys said it, so I have carte blanche on that one. This is going to be a hard movie for people to watch, but I think if you want to know sci-fi, you should watch it. 2001: A Space Odyssey. I think person who wants to... Like, look, I'm going to tell you right now, for people listening to this podcast, there is a 20-minute sequence of a fucking spaceship docking. Like, 20, I'm not shitting you, 20 fucking minutes. But at the same time, there's so much that Kubrick does in that film that just, that thing set the bar going forward for so many movies. Like, Interstellar especially, like, you can tell is like...
It's a rip. There's a rip on that.
It's a total sibling or offspring of what 2001 established.
Yeah.
So that's number two. All right, third one, One for the Road. Oh, this is tough. I'm literally looking at my fucking movie collection right now to see if I can pick it out, because there's just I keep going.
And you can't phone a friend, bro.
I am allowed to look at my collection. I have access. All
right, oh, I see here. Yeah, you can't ask the audience. So
oh, hold up. Did you just say oh, I see? Okay. Wait, what? So I'm thinking, so Matthew, in the army world, OIC means officer in charge. So it just means that you can do whatever you want. Is that what you were referencing, Josh? Or
no, I was referencing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I was like, you can't phone a friend.
Okay.
You know.
Got it.
Oh, you can. Oh, you have your collection there? Yeah, you can ask the audience.
I do have that. No, that's me. My collection is an extension of me. fuck, dude. Nah, that ain't sci-fi. I mean, yeah, all right,
yeah,
fine. Well, I'm gonna fall back. I'm gonna fall back on it. Fucking Ghost in the Shell, 100%.
Yeah,
like Matthew already said it, but I did my best with the other two. Ghost in the Shell is another one I think about constantly when it comes to sci-fi. But Josh, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say, while you were thinking about your third option, I was gonna jump in. Space Odyssey 2001, probably my number four. And yeah, if you're out there, like, and you're listening. Yeah, there's a 20-minute scene where they're tripping through space on mushrooms. There's a 20-minute scene with guys in monkey outfits. I mean, but it's so good. It's so cerebral.
The pacing on that movie is a challenge, but it's one of those, like, you never forget it, like, afterwards. And again, like, it's one of those, I talk about people all the time when they're trying to get into movies. Like, if you see the OG ones, you get to see where everybody steals from. And then, like, you don't watch more recent movies the same way, because you're like, oh, motherfucker, like, I know what that's, oh, that's some bullshit, he just stole it from that guy. It's like if you looked at a Picasso painting and were like, that motherfucker just saw that guy's painting and was like, I'm gonna do this instead, I'm just gonna throw some of these brush strokes. Okay, you know what, no, this was another one I was thinking about. I will take Ghost in the Shell out. I'll throw another one on here. This one's super obscure, and this is another arguable sci-fi movie. There's a movie called Dark City from 1999.
Ooh.
And it's a hardcore genre mashup.
Is that the one that came out the same time as The Matrix,
basically? Yeah, it got super overshadowed by The Matrix. Yeah. I found it at the Blu-ray at a garage sale like a week ago for like $5. I was like, I'm buying this shit. Because it's a great movie. I saw it my sophomore year of college, and it like changed my life. But you don't know it's a sci-fi movie until literally the last 20 minutes of the movie. And I know that doesn't make sense saying it now, but if you guys were to go back and find it and watch it, like, it's a great movie.
I'm gonna have to say I haven't seen it, but a lot of like conversations I've been in when we talk about sci-fi, people recommend Dark City every time.
Seriously?
And I just haven't gotten around to seeing it.
That's
so
dope, bro.
It's now I got homework to do. I'll okay, get back so, to you.
Look, next time you come over, if you get to come over, we'll throw it on because now I have it on Blu-ray. We can throw it up on the big 4K big screen.
Marcus told me that Prometheus was gonna, I'm sorry, Lons. Oh my gosh. Lons told me that Prometheus was gonna be a sticking point a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't know if it is going to be. I'll put it out there. I like the movie, okay?
Me too.
Obviously, I love Ridley Scott. If he touches it, it's gold to me. I'm going to eat it up. I love what he does. I love the atmosphere. I love the tension. I love the alien violence, all this stuff. And I guess what we were teasing at earlier with Prometheus and all these other movies is the more the lore keeps getting meddled with and messed around with, it gets kind of muddy, you know?
Yeah, and, 100%.
Dumb scientists.
Oh, man. And yeah, they're dumb scientists, right? They're like playing loud music in a freaking cave with alien eggs, and they're just kicking back, like touching it. I remember, what was it, in Prometheus, the guy walks up and
he's like, wow, let's touch it
and look at a sample. And I'd have said F that. I would have ran back to the ship and blasted away.
Well, I was just like excited for anything sort of like alien related, but I was totally down for not seeing a xenomorph. I was ready for like just completely different, just explore the lore, go in a different direction. And I kind of would have liked to them to spend more time talking about engineers and things like that and less time talking about whatever they were talking about and the goop and the stuff like that. I don't know. I feel like those beings are more interesting than just the black liquid. I feel like he kind of gave into like audience demands of like, this has to tie back into like, we want to see the aliens again. Like,
yeah.
But there was potential. I thought it was going to be cool. I like the idea of the space jockeys and going like, kind of like expanding the universe to a whole different race.
Yeah. That could have been a whole other avenue of storytelling that they pursued, you know what I mean?
And also more development of Giger's awesome art too.
Yeah,
that's good.
Film trivia for people listening to this for the first time. If you haven't seen the Alien movies, the original design of the alien, the xenomorph, the facehugger, and the engineer characters that we're talking about in Prometheus, they were all designed by this super obscure Swedish artist named H.R. Geiger. Everybody pronounces it differently. It's G-I-G-E-R. And this guy pretty much set like the precedent for like how that shit was designed. Cause they could have gone like a weird squid thing or whatever, but they freaking commissioned this weird Swedish guy who made phallic gross art to make this alien then. And then that was
his top notch.
Yeah.
I still think the xenomorph is the best alien design ever put to screen.
No for question. Sure. For sure. Like, unbeatable.
And that can only come from the mind of like a tormented artist like him.
Yes, totally.
There's a dude who had night terrors and it shows in how he in his designs.
Yeah, because Matthew, you were the one that showed me that like 2 hour long fucking alien making of documentary on YouTube that like you can't find for anywhere else. For Alien One. You were the one that showed and like there's a whole deep dive into Geiger and Giger and his whole influence on everything. It was crazy. You know what? What was the movie that you popped your cinematic cherry with sci-fi wise? So Matthew, was it Alien 3 for you? What was the first movie that really like you that really like introduced you to the world of sci-fi and what it could do?
Oof. That's a good question. Alien 3, yeah, I was pretty young when I saw Alien 3. That might be one of the oldest ones I remember seeing. Yeah.
Okay.
I remember something seeing older than that, but I think it was kind of like old B movie. So I wouldn't even be able to tell you what it was, but I think probably Alien. Yeah. Alien 3.
Hell yeah. Josh.
Oh man. I mean, we talked about the spectrum, right? Yeah. Star Wars. I mean, for sure. As a young kid, you know, I'll never forget it. I had the VHS collection. I had the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And it came in that dope box sleeve, right? Where it came down and then the sides opened up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I could see it in my head. If it was here right now, I would cry. I've watched it over and over again with a VHS tape just burned out. you couldn't even watch it anymore. So when they did the DVD special edition, it blew me away, and I bought it up because I couldn't watch the VHS anymore.
Yeah.
And that was something that I did a lot as a kid, was watch Star Wars over and over.
Hell yeah.
If I had to rank any of the Star Wars movies, I think Empire Strikes Back
100%
is going to be the best sci-fi movie out of that. Yeah. But moving forward, as you know, sort of growing up and moving into life, The Matrix was the movie for me that it floored me. I think I saw this movie when I was, what was it, 98 that came out? I was probably 10 or 12.
No, 90, it was either 98 or 99. I can't remember.
Yeah. Which year. And I remember seeing that. I didn't understand how cool it was then. I didn't. I must, there's no way I could have. But the more that I watch it and the repeated times that I've seen this movie,
it ages
it is
really well.
Expert. It's well done. I have high hopes for the new movie.
Yeah.
I hope that it does really well.
And
I hope that they can. I'm scared, to be honest, because it's hard to replicate that originality. But I'll be there. I'll be there to support, and I want to see where they go with it. I think there's some new ideas that they could breathe into it, and maybe we can talk about that. But The Matrix. I would say Star Wars. You know, very young was like the first movie, really the sci-fi that really woke me up, and then The Matrix was the one that, you know, just takes you right down the rabbit hole. And so that's pretty much it for me. How about yourself, Lance?
You guys are going to laugh.
I'm going to take a drink.
Yeah. Every time you talk, I keep sipping.
I'll never forget.
Was it like Flash Gordon?
No, it wasn't that campy.
Were you like, I got it. You were five and you watched 2001 Space Odyssey and you're like, I want to be in the film career.
Hell no, dude. I didn't see 2001 until my freshman year of college, like when I was in full tilt, like I'm going to be the biggest film nerd on the planet. No, my first sci-fi cinematic experience, at least the one that stuck with me that I know set the tone for later. Because Independence Day is big, but I don't count it as a sci-fi film.
Whoa.
Like the film that made me think about sci-fi and what it could do is fucking 1998's Lost in Space. Do you guys know that movie? Probably don't. Fucking Matt.
It's a vague memory, but I remember it.
Is it the Matt LeBlanc one?
Yeah, I was just about to say Matt LeBlanc, yep. William Hurt, fucking Heather Graham when she was in her prime, Lacey Chabert. Like that movie was a game changer for me. I know it's cheesy, and like I've watched it recently and it's still actually pretty good. It's aged. You can tell it's a 90s movie, but there's still elements of it of like the studio system was onto something back in those days. There's just the visual effects are great. The character development is thin, but it's there. It's real. It's not just, oh, Cap wants to find Bucky. Like, it's not just that, you know.
Nice.
But it's also just not like, I'm going to throw all this shit at the fucking paint wall like Prometheus. Like, there's a clear story with clear character arcs. And, like, they do cool stuff with it, like dealing with time travel and gaps in time. And space exploration, like there's one scene where they use their hyperdrive to fly through the sun, which is probably complete horseshit now thinking back on it, fucking however many years later. But that movie had a huge influence on me. Like the one scene I go back to constantly, and it's total Hollywood spectacle, but like it still hits me like right here. So
this is hilarious. I'm eating this up.
There's
always this movie and be like, it's garbage. How does this affect you,
dude? Watch it.
I can't wait to see it.
If it's on Hulu, check it out. See if it hits you at all, or if it's just complete hokiness. Or maybe your inner child will be like, okay, I could see.
This is your Man of Steel.
Yeah. Oh God. Fuck. Fuck right off with that. No, that's a conversation for another. Anyways, so like one of the big central conflicts of the movie is William Hurt, the Mr. Robinson, and Matt LeBlanc's character, the pilot. They keep fighting over command of like who controls the ship and deciding what's going to happen in the mission. And like towards the end of the movie, because William Hurt has like gone through this like time loop thing and like has seen what's going to happen, like they finally have to trust each other. And William Hurt gives Matt LeBlanc an order. And it's the first time where he's like, all right, fine, I'm going to follow your order. And then they have to fly through the planet as it's breaking up because there's a time rift in the planet that's ripping it apart. And like, and when I watch it, I'm like, this is basically like a cheesy road movie where the family has to drive like across a bridge as it's exploding or like something dumb. But like, it's done so well and like, so like it's self-aware, but like it doesn't care. And like, those are my favorite kind of 90s movies of like, we know this is stupid, but you know what? We don't give a fuck. We're just going to go with it. And like the scene of them flying through the planet as it's exploding, and then they fucking exit the atmosphere just before the planet's about to explode. Like, there's just something about that that I come back to, and I'm like, I remember seeing that as a kid. I was like, space is fucking cool. Spaceships are fucking cool. Like, there's so much out there that I don't know, and like, that's exciting to me. You know what I mean? And I think that that should be what sci-fi should. That's one of the great things of what sci-fi should be about. You know what I mean? Of just like, oh, there's so much more out here that I don't even know and understand, but like, that's cool. And like, I want to know more, you know what I mean? And for me, it was fucking watching Matt LeBlanc fly a fucking giant ass spaceship through a planet as it's blowing up. Go figure. But anyways, nice. Yeah, I digress.
No, that's not bad. I'm going to watch this movie tonight and just laugh.
Do it. It's not, I'm telling you, it's not a bad movie. I've watched it again. I'll
check it out.
It's fun. It's good times. Gary Oldman plays the bad guy, and he's like, he's borderline between hamming it up.
I was going to say Gary Oldman. I thought I remembered vaguely Gary Oldman being in there.
Yeah, he's the villain.
Now I think about it. I wonder if, in my case, Fifth Element might be the first one, since we mentioned Gary Oldman.
Oh, hell yeah. Totally. Hey, yeah, we all got to start somewhere.
Fifth Element stuck with me for a while. That one was, that's great. A trip.
I don't care what anybody says. I love that fucking. So my Aunt Marianne, one of my favorite things that she taught me growing up, she was like, Lons, she's like, you want to know one of my baseline personality gauges of whether or not I know I'm going to get along with a person? I go, what, Mary? I was like 8 years old at the time. She's like, if they don't like the Fifth Element, I know we're not going to get along. And I was like, that has stuck with me for the rest of my life. Like, for those of you out there, if you haven't seen the Fifth Element, it used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it's on there anymore. Luc Besson, fucking 90s movie. It's a sci-fi space opera. It's Bruce Willis doing his best Bruce Willis being Bruce Willis thing, except his hair is bleached. He's got fucking those tips. Those, what are they called? The frosted tips.
Blown he's a tips.
He's a down on his out taxi driver who's got to save the universe. Oh, so good. Classic.
Yeah, it's definitely a Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's just so, there's just so much weird French, not even French. There's just so much weird other shit in it that like.
It's pretty French.
Okay.
I didn't say it probably, yeah.
But just.
There's opera,
Well, just the idea that you would put Bruce Willis in an avant-garde sci-fi space opera is one of the most ballsy, but looking back on it, like that's fucking genius ideas ever. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like. God, I love that movie. I'm looking at it right now, fucking 4K Blu-ray. I'm going to pop that shit in after we're done here. I'm going to watch the opera scene because that diva, bless her heart.
Oh, yeah.
Lilu Dallas, multipass.
Yeah, it's really good. So I'll pull back a little bit.
Yeah.
You don't think Independence Day is a sci-fi? What? Because I know you love this movie. I know you love Will Smith. I know.
Look, Independence Day is in my top three. If anyone ever asks me what one of my favorite movies is, I will always say ID4. But look. Let's
it's
be
an
honest.
Action thriller?
No, let's be honest.
You gotta give me a breakdown.
Josh, it's a 60s disaster movie. It's the Poseidon Adventure or the Towering Inferno, but instead of a fire fucking things up or a ship, it's just aliens showing up on Earth.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Like, War of the Worlds is more of a sci-fi movie than,
I'd agree with that.
Than Independence Day is, because War of the Worlds has a communist subplot or subtext behind its themes and what it's trying to say. Independence Day is just like riding on the heels of 80s. Blockbusters and being like, you know what we could do? Let's take a 60s disaster movie, but it's not just a building, it's the goddamn world. We're not just gonna put a building on fire, we're gonna set the whole goddamn planet Earth on fire.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
You know how they actually did that?
The miniatures?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Matty, you want to talk about it? I mean, I could go all day.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you guys are, you know, but for the people who are listening, basically they built miniatures of, especially for example, the World Trade Center, Empire State Building scene. They built a bunch of miniatures, and basically a whole street with miniatures, and they set the miniatures vertically with the camera pointing down, and they just lit up a giant fireball at the base of the whole structure, and so the fire just rides up the structure, and that's how they get this fire coming towards the camera.
Those effects,
and they had to film. They had to film in slow motion.
Yeah.
So the fire is actually kind of darker than it would be in real life, but
yeah,
it's just very ingenious visual effects.
So good.
I know when you brought it up, I thought for sure it would come up tonight.
I mean, yeah, but no, I think Yeah, because it's not a sci-fi. In my opinion, it's not. Like, it has sci-fi. It's the same thing as Aliens. Like, Aliens is one of my favorite movies. It's one of the best action movies ever made. But it is an action movie with science fiction elements. It's like trying to say Halo is a science fiction video game. No, Halo is a first person. Mass Effect is a science fiction game. You know,
hey, there you go.
Yeah. Deus Ex is a science fiction game. Yeah. Fucking Halo is a war game, is a fucking war first person shooter in a science fiction setting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think that's good for anybody who's listening to understand some of those delineations. You know, I think the casual fan, I guess, or, you know, the audience member might not recognize some of those subtleties and nuances about what actually makes a movie a specific genre. And
yeah,
so I think that breakdown is really helpful.
Hell yeah. Event Horizon a sci-fi movie?
Oh, hell yeah, Event Horizon's a sci-fi movie. Yes.
That movie's creepy, yo.
Yeah.
That movie gave me nightmares.
Yeah. Yeah. Event Horizon. So my buddy Dylan, he's going to be on a future episode. He actually, because Event Horizon did it first. And then when he saw Interstellar, it pissed him off. He was like,
the paper thing?
Yeah. He was like, he's like, can filmmakers please stop using this? He's like, because it's like only semi-accurate and like it kind of works, but like, can they just stop using that as an easy shortcut to explain this shit to people? Cause it's getting on my nerves. Cause there's like three or four different sci-fi movies that all use that same. Stranger Things is the other one that did it with the Upside Down, did the exact same shit of like holding the paper, doing the thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. Like that has been not a crutch, but it's just been like a go-to thing of like.
Interstellar did it.
Yeah.
It's all out there.
Yeah. All right, boys. Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I want to add a four to my list.
Okay.
It's for homework for who's out there listening. District 9.
I
think you should go out and check that one out. As far as we talk about sci-fi that you could easily get into and relate to and kind of understand. And I was talking about this earlier, how, you know, sci-fi is, for me, why I love it so much is because it speaks to us today. Yeah. You know, as we talk about like Moon and Interstellar and all these other ones, District 9 is a great one. Has a lot of context for our time, and it's so well done. And it was on a budget, and they just crushed it. And you know, it's still got all that fun sci-fi stuff to it. There's aliens, and there's you know, big mech robots and violence and all that. But I want to put that out there for anybody listening. My number four, I think, would be District 9, and a little bit of homework for everybody. Other than that, no closing statements. Just going to keep drinking, and I'm working on getting passed out on the ground here in about 2 minutes. So,
Matthew, closing thoughts?
Not particular. I'm just going to basically, once we hang up, continue thinking about what other sci-fis I've missed. And I'm sure everything is going to pop up in my head as soon as we hang up, of course, because that's always how it works. Sure. I don't know. I'm hoping for some good stuff on the horizon. Off the top of my head, I don't know what's coming really in terms of sci-fi.
It's hard, man.
Really big.
But... I mean, the industry's on pause right now. Anything big budget that would be potentially good sci-fi is on.
Tenet was supposed to save everything, and you know.
Nah.
Well, I think there's the, was it Raised by Wolves is one.
Yeah.
And then Matrix 4. It's really all
One. But I don't know if that one's coming now.
Josh, did you watch
Dune? Hey, Dune. Wait.
Dune. Denis Villeneuve. Mm-hmm. Yeah, HBO Max. Denis Villeneuve's still pissed off about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I do want to see this movie in theater, by the way. I want to see it in theater.
I'm not going to do it. Hey, so trivia note for people listening who don't know what we're talking about. So, since HBO Max and Warner Brothers are owned by the same conglomerate, the studio went behind all the directors' backs and just blanket were like, yeah, we're just going to put all these big budget movies to screen on HBO Max at the same time as they come out in theaters, or they may not come out in theaters until later without consulting with any of the directors. So a lot of the filmmakers whose big films are getting released this year, like Kong versus Godzilla, fucking Dune, even Judas and the Black Messiah, those directors were not consulted by the studio when they were like, yeah, we're going to put these movies on a streaming platform either before or at the same time. Yeah. Fucking Christopher Nolan wrote a huge letter about it. Denis Villeneuve wrote a huge letter about it. These guys were furious.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were just like, yeah, we're just going to take your shit and do whatever we want with it because we can. Just to give you context to that. So like Dune is a big science fiction film that's coming out this year. Huge cast. Denis Villeneuve, he directed Sicario, fucking Arrival. fucking Prisoners, and then Dune is going to be one of his big magnum opi.
And Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, Blade Runner. And Blade Runner 2049. And like, and and the studio was just like, well, we're just going to do whatever we want.
I would love to see a like 6 to 8 series Dune movie. I've read quite a few of the books, love them, and would love to see where they go with it. So I that's why I feel like I'd love to see it in theater.
Yeah.
You know, probably the way it's meant to be seen. Yeah. There's been some silent protests out there, even from the actors who've like, was it? Timothy Chalamet,
Chalamet.
I screwed that up. You know, he was like wearing a sort of a rebellion t-shirt when he was on SNL. So, you know, there's a lot of friction out there regarding the, you know, how they're going to distribute this.
Yeah, it's a big problem.
Yeah.
But Matthew, what were you saying? Okay, yes, so you were just wondering what's on the horizon. Yeah, so Dune is a big one.
I'd forgotten about Dune,
I mean, there's a lot of Raised by Wolves is one of the big ones right now. That's Ridley kind of doing his thing on the streaming platform. Okay, so there's two movies that I've thought of in this. So one is not really science fiction, but I'm gonna throw it out there just because I fucking love it. And it's more it's more science fiction than fucking Independence Day. It's like, Pitch Black. Fucking I can't put that in any other genre.
All right.
But like, and it's not really science. It's just enough. It's just enough science fiction to be like, all right, I'd buy that for a dollar. But like, that's one of those movies where people are like, I want to watch something in space or I want to watch something with aliens. I'm like, yo, go watch Pitch Black from when Vin Diesel was not famous yet. And he was like still trying his roles. Dude. Oh, I love that movie so much. And then.
Oh,
sorry. You go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to say there was even an animated series of that when I was younger. I remember watching, and that was great. The Chronicles of Riddick, I think, had kind of a Prometheus. How they did it, they just threw everything at you.
Yeah. And, a little too much going on.
Right.
But
right,
Pitch Black is so simple. It's so contained, and it works, in my opinion. And then this is legit sci-fi. I saw this film last year, and I want to read the book. I'm going to get around to it eventually. There's a Russian film called Solaris. That is from, I think, the 60s or the 70s. I'd have to look it up. From famous Russian filmmaker Andrei Tarkovsky. Fantastic film. And it's like, it's very much like everything we've been talking about is like what sci-fi can do and the questions it raises. And then Steven Soderbergh made a remake of it in like 2001.
The one with George Clooney?
Yeah, with George Clooney. Both are good. I think that the original is better. Not because, the original is always better, but I just think that they're... Tarkovsky was able to do more, in my opinion, with his film than Soderbergh aimed to do with his. But either way, they're both good, and I've been meaning to read the book for forever. So yeah, those are like some tag-ons towards the end. Like if you're looking for some just fun, you know, fast food sci-fi, it's not 100% real sci-fi, Pitch Black. Then if you want to go down the deep end, check out Solaris. All right, guys. Well, I guess... Yes, that's I could go all fucking night. Matthew, how you doing over there? You're in the latest time zone. You doing all right over there?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm in a good time.
Hell yeah.
My drink's done, but yeah, having a great time.
Josh, you good over there?
I'm doing great. And it's just honestly just so fun. I'm glad we got to get together and do this. Just looking forward to the future.
Hell yeah. It's been a pleasure as always. It's great talking with you guys. I'm glad we got to do this. And
likewise. I'm definitely gonna check out the next ones. I look forward to the future episodes.
I mean, Matthew, you're coming back. I have you slated as a guest star on a future episode. We're not gonna talk about that. And Josh, you're gonna be a regular on this.
Oh, so, boy.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, guys, until next time. Thanks so much for coming out.
All right, have a good night.
Thank you.
All right, good night, guys.
Have a good night, everyone.
Later.
For those of you who are still here, thanks for listening. Our next episode will be dropping in mid-June, where we delve into the world of indie films and the art house genre. The intro and outro music for this podcast was produced by Eric Godlow. Feel free to leave a comment or hit us up on the messages on our Instagram or our webpage at Drunk Movie Rants. Also, feel free to check out Matthew on Instagram at Sketchy Frenchy, where he posts sketches and drawings of all of the artwork that he does independently. Thanks.